This program is sponsored by The Church of God International and supported by our viewers. Throughout our world today, we see social ills that touch and tempt our character in so many negative ways. We see family problems resulting in arguments, alienations, and yes, even divorce. Prostitution and pornography are all on the increase and often found moving into neighborhoods and homes that aren't prepared for the challenges they present. Greed, theft, and yes, robbery have great impact on testing the resolve of a society's character in general. How do you prevent you and your loved ones from being affected? What can you do? How do you develop, build, and nurture godly character in the face of such powerfully negative social forces? Stay with us as we address these questions on today's program of the Armor of God.
The Church of God International presents Armor of God, a program of biblical understanding. And now your host, Vance Stinson.
The history of Christianity is a legacy of persecution and martyrdom. From the time of the apostles, the original disciples, down through the centuries, Christians have been persecuted. Many things have they suffered. Violence, the edge of the sword, you name it, just about every form of torture has been administered against the Christians, against the professing Christian church. So we see all this suffering going on among Christians. We see so many dying. We see some being beheaded or thrown to the lions. And we see all this persecution being carried out against them. And the question comes up, why? Why so much suffering? Why doesn't God intervene and protect his people more often than he does? This is a question, a legitimate question, I believe, that has been asked by many down through the centuries. For that matter, many have wondered, why does God sometimes not heal when we ask for his healing intervention? Why does he let us suffer? Why all the problems and the pain and the tribulation? Well, this is a question I'm going to address today. I believe it's a very important one. It falls under the category of theodicy, and it has to do with the purpose of suffering and what it does actually for us in the overall plan of God. Now, before I get into this subject today, I'd like to first mention the literature that we want you to have. First, we have a booklet entitled How to Build Godly Character. And along with the booklet, we have a taped message by Dwayne Nickel entitled Spiritual Development Through Discipleship. You can have both of these by simply calling us at our toll-free number, 888-578-8791. Also, be sure to check us out on our website where you can find other material. You can do that by, you can find us at www.cgi.org. At our website, be sure to check us out. Again, it's 888-578-8791 for the free literature that we're offering today. Now, to get on with this subject, I'd like to begin with Romans chapter 5 and focus particularly on a word that the Apostle Paul uses here. And I'm using the New King James Version. It may be there may be a different word in some of the other translations, but I believe this one adequately captures the meaning of the original Greek. The Apostle Paul says, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 5 of Romans, "Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom also we have access by faith into this grace in which we stand, and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. And not only that, but we also glory in tribulations." Get that now. We glory in tribulations. In other words, the things we suffer. "Knowing that tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance, character." That's the word I want to focus on today. I'm going to address the subject of how to build godly character, because the reason we're put here on the earth, at least a part of the reason, and the reason we're allowed to suffer and face all of these tribulations and difficulties in life, is that we are building character. This is the means whereby free creatures, that is, morally free creatures, are able to develop godly character. It says, "and character, hope." And once we have this character, then we have hope. Hope for the things that God promises to us. The dictionary definition of character is moral excellence and firmness. That's a simple definition. Put it in terms of the Bible, we find a very good definition of that kind of character described in terms of love in 1 Corinthians 13. I'd like to take a look at 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter. I'm going to be reading from the New International Version because I believe this thought-for-thought translation correctly captures the meaning of the Greek and puts it in words, in terms that we can easily relate to. In 1 Corinthians 13, beginning in verse 4, the Apostle Paul says, "Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails." Now, when you think about that for a few moments, you realize that the popular definition of love today doesn't really match what he is saying. For so many people today, whether you're talking about love of country, love of family, romantic love, or whatever, they tend to think in terms of love as being an overpowering emotion that somehow descends upon people and more or less overtakes them. In other words, it's a feeling, it's a sentiment. And for some people, especially in talking about romantic love, they speak of falling in love or easily falling out of love and then in love with somebody else. Something just overwhelms you. You fall into it, you fall out of it. It's an emotion. And that's the way people tend to think of love. Now, don't misunderstand me. I understand that human emotion is very important. God wired us this way. He made us emotional creatures. And we must express emotions in all of our relationships as well as in our worship of Him. Emotional expression is appropriate. But the point here I'm making is that love is not a mere emotion into which and out of which people helplessly fall. It's not a mere sentiment. It is commitment. It is all these things that the Apostle Paul says. It is not boast. It is not proud. It is not envy. It's not self-serving, self-seeking. You know, you hear people in today's world, you hear it on the soap operas, you see it in the movies, and unfortunately you see it in real life. People talk about how they fell in love with someone. You have a husband and a wife, and somehow things are not what they should be. And then the next thing you know, someone else outside of that union begins to fill an important emotional need, or allegedly important. And the next thing you know, you hear about how the husband or wife just, you know, didn't do this for me. I was lonely, and I found my needs met in this other person, and it's just somehow right for us to be together. And so people use such reasoning as that, calling it love, giving it that label, and justifying, at least to some extent, what is really nothing more than just plain adultery, to be quite frank. It is adultery. But they do it. And they speak of falling in love and of developing. And what they're talking about is this emotional bond that they begin to develop with someone, and it oftentimes is inappropriate. You know, real love says no to such feelings. It's understandable, people working in this world, men and women working together, that sometimes an emotional bond may begin to develop. So many people let it develop. They let it get out of proportion. They even face divorce sometimes as a result of this and then marry someone else. But genuine love, the love that is described right here, this unselfish love, says no to those feelings. So don't mistake love for feelings. Love is not mere feeling. Love is commitment. Love is this earnest desire of one's heart to do right before God. That's what love is. You just read 1 Corinthians 13 and you will see that. And this is one of the major components of character. The Apostle Paul continues on, love never fails, he says. He says, where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things or put childish things behind me, as this translation says. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. When the saints are glorified, when Christ returns, when the reward is received, we shall see as face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am also fully known. He says, and now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. And those three things, my friends, are the basic, essential qualities and components of that which we call character, of godly character. And that's what Christians are called upon to put on. We're to put on godly character by living a life of overcoming. You know, the book of Revelation talks quite a bit about overcoming. We see in the second and third chapters of the book of Revelation that Christ's message to the seven churches, repeatedly, he calls upon them to overcome. There were obstacles that they were facing. There were difficulties. There were false prophets. There were foul spirits. Things in their lives that they were facing that were not in accord with God's good and perfect will. And Jesus Christ says in these two chapters that they are to overcome those things. In chapter 2, he says to the church at Ephesus, to him who overcomes, this is in verse 7, to him who overcomes I will give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. The overcomers, those who make the effort to overcome those things in their lives that are contrary to the will of God. To the church in Smyrna, he says, he who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. He says also to this same church, do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. You know, Jesus Christ could, with but a word, deliver these people from the persecutors. But he says instead, I'm going to let it happen. You're going to face trials. You're going to face tribulations. Why? Because, you see, it's comparable to refining gold. You put the heat to the gold, you melt the gold, and the impurities rise to the top and can be skimmed off, and you have pure gold. So it is with the building of godly character. God allows the trials of this life to serve as the heat which refines the gold. In other words, that develops the character. And that's what he's talking about right here when he says, he who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. And in the church of Pergamos, he says, to him who overcomes I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I will give him a white stone, and on the stone a new name written which no one knows except him who receives it. And over again to all seven of these seven churches, he promises these blessings to those who overcome. And again, it may be described as described in terms of gold being refined by fire. And that's exactly what character building, or how character building takes place. Now, we have many examples of moral excellence and firmness in the Bible. I'm not going to turn there, but in Genesis chapter 39, you can read the example of Joseph and how he was a servant and became the chief servant in the house of Potiphar, who was one of Pharaoh's officers in Egypt. This was after Joseph, of course, was sold into slavery by his brothers. And you will read the account of how Potiphar's wife attempted to have an adulterous affair with Joseph, and Joseph refused. And then finally, after continually refusing, one day he literally ran away from her, and she grabbed his garment and had his garment. Then she accused him. He knew full well that by refusing her, that he was jeopardizing his life. And you know, it's interesting in that chapter that he refers to that act of adultery, which was never committed, but he refers to it as a sin against God, which means he recognized what sin was, and this was long before the giving of the Ten Commandments at Sinai. He understood that adultery was a sin, and he fled from it, even though he jeopardized his life in doing so and ultimately wound up in jail. But God delivered him, and God used him in bringing the people of Israel into that land so that later he would deliver them with a mighty hand. So Joseph was used in a very powerful way, this man who resisted sin, this man who demonstrated moral excellence and firmness in his life. Also, we read in Daniel 3, and I would like to turn over there and read a portion of that. In Daniel chapter 3, we read about the Hebrew children and what they did when King Nebuchadnezzar ordered them to bow down before an image of himself. In Daniel chapter 3, we read about the king making an image of gold and how he called for all the empire to come out and bow down when they heard the sound of the music. And then when it was reported that these three Hebrews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, did not bow down, did not worship the image, that Nebuchadnezzar called them and asked them to do it, and they said no. Summarizing the story, they said no. They were respectful, but they told the king, knowing full well that anyone who didn't bow down before that image was to be cast into a fiery furnace, they said no, we worship only the God of heaven. And so Nebuchadnezzar ordered that the furnace be made seven times hotter than it had been. And then he told the men to go and cast these young men into the fiery furnace. And they did. In fact, those men who threw them into the furnace themselves were consumed by the flames because the flames were so hot. And then Nebuchadnezzar looked into the furnace, and then we read this. This is what he saw. He says, look, in verse 25, this is chapter 3, verse 25, look, he answered, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. So I personally believe that it was the one who became Jesus Christ. Some would say it's an angelic being. It doesn't really matter. But God delivered them, and this fourth person was seen with them in this fiery furnace, and they came out alive. Now, they knew full well that it could be that God would allow them to perish when they were thrown into the furnace, but the point is, because of their moral convictions, their moral excellence and firmness, which is the definition of character, they said no to the king, even in the face of death. And we see many other examples in the Bible of this kind of moral excellence and firmness, this kind of character coming out in God's people. And we find a summation in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, of these people of character. These are called people of faith, but you could just as well call them people of character because they did have great moral character. And remember, faith is one of those essential elements of character. We read about Abraham, for example. It mentions Abel, Enoch, and Noah. Here is Abraham in verse 8 of Hebrews 11. It says, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out of the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. So Abraham went out of his country not knowing where he was going, and by faith he went where God told him to go. Now, again, you see this firmness there. He could have stayed in his own country. He could have had occasion to go back to his own country. And even though he dwelt in the land of promise in tents with Isaac and Jacob later, nevertheless, he continued in the land of promise, even though he did not receive it at that time as an inheritance. He looked through the eyes of faith to see the inheritance to come. Again, this is all a part of the firmness, the moral conviction, the moral excellence, and the firmness that is godly character. And, of course, the more he used this conviction, the more he exercised his faith, the more character grew and increased in him. The same is true with Isaac and Jacob, and Sarah is mentioned here as well. And then it goes on to say in verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promise, but having seen them from afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. These are people of moral excellence and firmness, people who looked to God, believed God, and walked according to faith. And that's the way character comes about. We also read the example of Moses here. Moses also renounced what he could have had. It says in verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. You know, Egypt was within his grasp. The power of Egypt was there for him. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. So Moses was a man of perseverance, a man who endured, as if he could see God, as if he could see, as it says, him who is invisible, not fearing the king. Again, here you have this moral excellence and firmness that we define or that we call character, and we see it at work in this man whose name was Moses. Now, there are several principles that we can put into use, several rules that we can put into use that we must keep in mind always in developing godly character. Again, this booklet that we're offering today, How to Build Godly Character, does just that. It tells you the principles and some of the advice that you can get here for building character in your own life. Some very important principles. They're all biblical principles, and perhaps we could multiply those rules or those principles, but here we have about six of them, and they're very important ones if we want to abide in the will of God and develop the character that He wants us to have. I'm going to go through a list of these very briefly, and you can get the booklet and see descriptions of them more thoroughly. But the first principle is very simple. It is honor God. That ought to be a no-brainer for anyone. If you want to build godly character, you begin by honoring God. That means you fear God, which means you stand in awe of Him. You put Him first in everything. Remember, Jesus said the first and great commandment was you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul. So putting God first, the first commandment itself says you shall have no other gods before the true God. When you put Him first, when you honor Him in every way, then that's the first step in building godly character. You know, we honor God not only with our lips, not only in our worship services, not only in our prayers and our praises of honor and glory and so on, but we also honor Him with our substance through tithes and offerings. That's a way of honoring God. In fact, we look at every facet of our life and we see to it that facet, every detail in our life is brought into conformity to the will of God, and then we ask for His wisdom to be given to us so that we can more perfectly put His will into our lives, and that's the way we honor Him. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 28, we read a very important passage in this regard. Hebrews 12, verse 28. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. Now, when it speaks of fear, there is certainly a right fear. If we're living in sin, if we're transgressing God's laws, then we ought to be fearful. But there's also another side to fear, one that is the Christian who is in the will of God should abide in, and that is to stand in awe of Him. And if we do not stand in awe of God, recognizing Him as the great Creator who gives us everything we have, the air we breathe, the food we eat, our very lives, and we stand in awe of Him, then we're not honoring Him. So the number one principle in building godly character is to God. Secondly, and related to that, is this: diligently seek God. Hebrews 11, once again, and in verse 6, in talking about these heroes of faith, we read this. It says, but without faith it is impossible to please Him, for he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. I encourage you to read chapter 11 of the book of Hebrews once again. Read it, the whole chapter, and see how these people were diligent in the way that they sought God. You see, Noah, Abel, Enoch, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, all of these people, they had flaws in their lives. They were imperfect human beings, but they were diligent in seeking God, and they honored God. Another principle is produce fruit and be profitable. In John chapter 15 and verse 2, Jesus Christ says that every branch that abides in Him produces fruit. If it doesn't, then the Father will remove that branch. Another principle is beware of satanic and worldly influences, and this is a very important one. You know, this program is called The Armor of God. It's based on what we read in Ephesians chapter 6. We're told that the devil is very real. The principalities and the powers, the spiritual forces of darkness are at work behind the scenes, and it is absolutely essential that we put on the armor of God, that we're aware of those spiritual dark forces that would lead us away from God, and that we must then resist them. Another important principle is have a clear vision of God's plan. Proverbs 29 and verse 18 says, where there is no vision, the people perish. And we see again in Hebrews 11, people who had vision, people who looked to the plan of God, they knew that there was a city prepared for them whose builder and maker was God, and they kept their eyes on that goal. You may not be able to see every detail of God's plan for the future, but you have an overview, and you're able to understand it in those terms. And finally, a very important principle is communicate with God. We're to communicate with God through prayer, asking Him daily for the strength that we need to get through each day and abide in His will that day. Ask Him to talk to Him concerning sins and concerning the things in our lives that are contrary to His will. Those are the great principles, and those are the things, if you put into your life, you will build godly character. But watch this message, and we'll be back again next week for another edition of The Armor of God.
You know, many of you today probably thought it was rather odd that Van Stinson would use the topic of suffering to illustrate a method by which God would use to develop godly character. And yet throughout your Bible, this method is illustrated as a rather common method that God has used throughout history in dealing with those whom He has worked with in the Bible. As a matter of fact, even Jesus Christ Himself, the captain of our salvation, was made perfect through suffering. We can read about that in the book of Hebrews chapter 2, roughly around verse 10 or so. But furthermore, I want to share with you an interesting relationship illustrated with suffering and sin that is made by the Apostle Peter in chapter 4, verse 1. I want to read this to you. Notice here what he says. He says, "For as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. For he that has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin." Here is a barometric relationship that is illustrated between suffering and sin. In other words, he who suffers in this life, well, that's a good illustration of how much you're ridding yourself of sin. Contrary to many Christian ministries today, the fact is that Christians are not necessarily all that concerned or shouldn't be with material and physical blessings. You can ask, as a matter of fact, any third world Christian on just how materially blessed they are, and you will find that's really not a priority in their lives, be it in Africa, South America, or other parts of the underdeveloped world that Christians live in. The fact is that God is very concerned about the development of godly character more than anything, my friends. And that's exactly why you need to get our free offers today. Get the tape titled Spiritual Development Through Discipleship, available also on CD, along with the booklet How to Build Godly Character. They're both free for the asking. All you've got to do is dial 888-578-8791. Let the operator know which tape or format you prefer, be it tape or CD. Hit us on our website as well, www.cgi.org. My friends, this is Bill Watson, reminding all of you to keep on that whole armor of God and pay some attention to the development of godly character.
Armor of God and the free material offered is brought to you by the Church of God International of Tyler, Texas. You may write to us at Post Office Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710. Call toll-free at 1-888-578-8791 or call 1-903-939-2929 during regular business hours. You may visit our website at cgi.org or email us at armorofgod@cgi.org.
This program is sponsored by the Church of God International and supported by our viewers.